A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 27, Verse 15, Understanding Material Nature. Manyamanastaratmanam
Manyamanastaratmanam
Anashto Nashtaran Visha
Anashto Nashtaran Visha
Nashte Hankara Nidrashta
Nashte Hankara Nidrashta
Nashta Vita Ivaturaha
Nashta Vita Ivaturaha Manyamana.
Thinking. Tata.
Tata.
Then.
Ahana.
Himself. Anashta.
Anashta.
Although not lost.
Although not lost.
Nashtavat.
Nashtavat.
As lost.
As lost.
Misha.
Misha.
Falsely.
Falsely.
Nashtayaha karane.
Nashtayaha karane.
Because of the disappearance of the ego.
The seer.
Nashtavita. One who has lost his fortune.
Eva.
Like.
Atra.
Distress. Translation. The living entity can vividly feel his existence as the seer, but because of the disappearance of the ego during the state of deep sleep, he falsely takes himself to be lost. Like a man who has lost his fortune and feels distressed, thinking himself to be lost. Purport. Only in ignorance does a living entity think that he is lost. If, by attainment of knowledge, he comes to the real position of his eternal existence, he knows that he is not lost. An appropriate example is mentioned here in Nashtavit Ivatra. The person who is lost awaits a moment may think that he is lost, but actually he is not lost. Only his money is lost. But due to his absorption in the money, or identification with the money, he thinks that he is lost. Similarly, when we falsely identify with matter as our field of activities, we think that we are lost, although actually we are not. As soon as a person is awakened to the pure knowledge of understanding that he is an eternal servitor of the Lord, his own real position is revived. A living entity can never be lost. When one forgets his identity in deep sleep, he becomes absorbed in dreams, and he may think himself a different person, or may think himself lost. But actually, his identity is intact. This concept of being lost is due to false ego, and it continues as long as one is not awakened to the sense of his existence as an eternal servitor of the Lord. The Mahavadi philosopher's concept of becoming one with the Supreme Lord is another symptom of being lost in false ego. One may falsely claim that he is the Supreme Lord, but actually he is not. This is the last layer of Maya's influence upon the living entity. To think oneself equal with the Supreme Lord, or to think oneself to be the Supreme Lord himself, is also due to false ego. Mukam karati vachalam bhagavam kamale chirim yakitam bhajanam mande shikuru kiracharnam agyanam smitimarandasya gyanam charashatakara chakashuru tantanatasamay shikuru kreva. So not only do we feel lost in deep sleep, we also feel lost in the day if we lose our money. Some people, recently in India, a lot of people lost a lot of money because it was interesting. Myself also, I didn't lose it, but Like I changed my all my dollars and things so I could buy a plane ticket for America. So I had 1 lakh of rupees, 100,000 rupees in 509,000 rupee notes. The next day they said, it's all worthless. So, but I could deposit it in the bank, so it was not so much lost. But a lot of people lost a lot of money because they had black money. They did not account for it, they did not pay taxes for it, and some of it was false currency. There was one sugarcane factory, the whole factory was full of black money, they found. In Bombay and Delhi, they were throwing their money in the garbage, big barrels of money in the garbage. And some people were burning it. They were burning their money rather than give it to the poor people. Of course, they would only allow you to change 2,000 rupees per day. So if you had, it was a very difficult time in India. But you could understand that a lot of people felt lost. It was in November and December, basically November. The next day, I saw it on Facebook, your money is useless. And you couldn't change, after that, they wouldn't allow you to change money. And in the ATM, 2,000 rupees limit, you could take per day. So it was really difficult. But devotees were taken care of. Somehow they managed. Our retreat happened just 5 days after that. Harinam, holy name retreat. And somehow or other, Krishna, by mercy of Krishna, we managed. I know one devotee, she was from Australia, from Sydney, and she had no money. She had only 600 rupees for like many, many weeks. But Krishna took care, gave her a place to stay, food to eat. And so if you surrender to Krishna, you will not be lost, even in the most difficult circumstances. I also had the experience of being under anesthesia some years ago. And I felt lost because usually if you're under anesthesia, you're not conscious. But I was conscious. My consciousness was like that of an atom or a molecule. Everything was black. And I simply existed. There was no concept of identity, no concept, no intelligence, no senses, no mind, nothing. But I was conscious. And I understood what it means to go to the void. Before that, I had the wrong attitude about life, thinking it's good to get away from it all. Well, I had the ultimate in getting away from it all. I went to the void, and I became like void. But then what happened to me in that condition? I saw the holy name come in front of me like a screensaver. And I didn't know what it was because I was like an atom. But by habit, I started chanting Hare Krishna. And once I started chanting, my remembrance came back. Oh, I am a devotee of Krishna, yes. And everything came back, and I was looking around, and I said, well, it looks like I left my body. I don't see any gross or subtle body here. But how come I went to the void, and how come I didn't go to Krishna? I was not happy. But at least I could chant Hare Krishna. And for 4 hours, I was out. They gave me an overdose of anesthesia, which I almost died. So that was a near-death experience, and I was feeling like I was very lost. But then, because I had taught japa seminars, maybe seven of japa workshops, seven of them before I was put under anesthesia, then the holy name came to me at the time of death, near death. So we may think we are lost. If we were awake during our deep sleep, we might feel lost, might feel like an atom or molecule, because our identity is gone at that point. And so just like my identity was gone under anesthesia. Anesthesia is very similar to deep sleep, and you're supposed to sleep, but I didn't. And maybe that's why they kept giving me more. I was chanting. They wanted me to sleep, and I wasn't sleeping. So anyway, that is. And I remember I had prayed before that anesthesia that, please don't let me forget you, Krishna. And so Krishna came in the form of the holy name, and my realization was that even if you forgot Krishna at the time of death, Krishna won't forget you. But that means you have to practice in this life, always remembering Krishna. So this verse talks about the living entity can vividly feel his existence as the seer. So we are living inside this body. Yesterday we heard we are merged in the body. We are merged in these elements. But we are not this body. We are something different. We are the seer. We are the observer. So we must learn lessons. In the 11th canto, there is the Uddhava Gita. And it talks about 24 gurus. One of those gurus is the wind. We can learn a lesson. And there are the verses from 11th canto, 7th chapter. Although a self-realized soul may live in various material bodies while in this world, experiencing their various qualities and functions, he is never entangled. Just as the wind, which carries various aromas, does not actually mix with them. So the wind sometimes smells very sweet. If it goes over a rose garden, oh, what a nice fragrance. And sometimes the wind smells very bad. If it goes over the garbage dump, oh, what is this? If you go to Juba Bombay, I'm told that all the garbage, you can smell the garbage. Some kind of place near the Juhu temple. But the wind is the same. It doesn't change its nature. Sometimes it smells good, sometimes it smells bad. So sometimes we go through different experiences in life, and sometimes the experiences smell bad, or they are not happy for us. And sometimes our experiences are pretty nice. But we have to learn from the wind not to carry it. We go through happy times. The wind carries nice aromas and then it drops it. It carries bad aromas and then it drops it. So we must learn from the wind. Sometimes we may be very happy and we're having all money in it, and sometimes not. But we have to, okay, just let it go. Leave it and go on with your devotional service. Sometimes we see somebody, oh, it's a strong person. Oh, there's a weak person. Oh, that one's very intelligent. Oh, that one's retarded. Ah, such a beautiful person. Such an ugly person. That's a good person. Oh, that's a bad person. But the soul is not good or bad, not ugly or beautiful. It's not any of these things. It's something different. The actual person. So a Krishna conscious person is aware always that he's different from the temporary body. He experiences the changes like childhood, adolescence, adulthood, old age. But although he experiences the pains, the pleasures, the qualities, he knows that it's not me. He never thinks he's the body. He always understands he's an internal spirit soul. So that's what this purport Prabhupada says. If you think you're this body, then you will feel lost, always lost. Just like I was explaining in the previous class that I never felt like I belonged in this world somehow. Now, I understood I'm not American when I was 10 years old. But then when I saw Srila Prabhupada the first time and I started following him, I said, yes, this is where I belong. So this is who we are. We are servants of Krishna. We are servants of the spiritual master. So here it says, when we falsely identify with matter as our field of activities, we think we are lost, although we're not. As soon as a person is awakened to pure knowledge of understanding, he's an eternal servitor of the Lord, his own real position is revived. So the conclusion is we should not, if we see a devotee, we should not consider him in terms of bodily designation. See him, oh, here's a servitor of the Lord. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had 10, 12 children, and he was working a job. And how could he work in the outside world and be such a great devotee at the same time with 10, 12 children? You think you got a problem with one or two or three. Just imagine if you had 10, 12 children. So what was his consciousness? What was his attitude? His attitude was that all these children and my wife, they are eternal servants of Krishna. And my service is to maintain them. So that's how he could work. Sometimes people say, how can we work outside and become Krishna? Because you have to think, how do I offer this work to Krishna? How do I connect it to Krishna? What's the connection? The connection is that it can be service for Krishna. You give donation and you also serve your Vaishnava family. So the wind, now another guru, we heard about the wind. What we learned from the wind is not to be attached, that the soul has nothing to do with all these changes that we see going on in our circumstance, in our body. Not to be attached, let it go. So another guru is the sky. And I think today we can see the sky. It's a good day. It's a nice day for seeing the sky and the clouds are clearing. Although the mighty wind blows clouds and storms across the sky is not implicated or affected by these activities. Just like the first day I came here, I was lucky because I flew in and 1 hour later there was a huge storm. When I flew in, it was interesting. There were clouds all around, but right where we were landing, it was completely clear at the airport. We saw the clouds around, like storm clouds, but we were in the middle, and we landed. But those clouds hit very soon, and there was a huge storm, and I heard flash flooding and everything on the day, what was it, 29th, the day I arrived. So, but the sky is not affected by these things. Not changed. And similarly, the soul is not affected. We are the observer. We're not affected by contact with material nature. Although we enter a body made of earth, water, fire, air, ether, and though three modes are coming and they're hitting our body, our spiritual nature is not affected. So sometimes we see in the sky wind, rain, hurricane, cyclone, thunder. But the sky is not affected. So it's the background. So although this body and mind have so many changes, birth, death, happiness, distress, love, hate, we are the background. We are the observer of such activities. And so we are not affected. But if we identify with the body and mind, we get affected. Then we suffer. And so the soul, we hear from Bhagavad Gita, does not change. Kutastha, it's called. Steady. The body has six kinds of changes. Birth, then it remains. Growth, some byproducts, dwindles, and at last it vanishes, Prabhupada says, into oblivion. The soul, however, does not go through such changes. Isn't that good news? But somehow we feel like we're going through those changes, especially old age. It's funny, when you hit old age, then Prabhupada says in the purport, if the soul does not at any time become old as the body does. The so-called old man, therefore, feels himself to be in the same spirit as in his childhood or youth. Yes, and sometimes we always feel young inside. I was sitting next to a lady at the airport and I was explaining the difference between body and soul. And I asked her, so how old do you feel? She was like 50, 60. She said, yeah, I feel like 25, 30. So, inside we feel very young. 20s, in the 20s, or younger. And sometimes we forget that we are old. And we do things that we shouldn't do, like run down the stairs. And then when we get to the bottom, what did I do? No, we forget that we think we're not the body, but we are. I mean, well, we're in the body anyway. So we have to follow it. We have to take care of it. You know, we have an old body, so we have to do a lot of prevention rather than cure. Prevention is better than cure. So, also, we're feeling uncomfortable in this world. Why are we feeling uncomfortable? Because Bhagavad Gita says this world is like an upside-down banyan tree. It's a reflection of the reality of the real tree. So Prabhupada asked the question in his lecture on that verse that if someone were to hold you upside down for a long time, would you feel comfortable? No, so we're upside down in this world. So that's why we're not comfortable. It's not our real nature. We're meant to be eternal, 16 years old or less. That's our age in the spiritual world, 16 years old. So when we get older than that, then we don't feel comfortable. Just like even in this world, if you talk to a young child, so suppose the child is 10 years old, and you tell the child, wow, you look like 15. The child will feel, yes, this is really nice. They're complimenting me. I'm old. But if you tell a 30-year-old, you look like 40, then they won't be happy with you. No, if you tell them, well, you look like 18, yes, yes, of course. So the age, the nice age is like between 16 and 25. If you tell somebody you're that age, then they'll be happy. I remember when I was 18, I had the feeling, yes, this is the perfect age. But now I'm over almost 70, and it's not a difficult age to be, age of the body. But one thing is good, that at least we learned a lot of lessons and we won't make the same mistakes we did before. If we only had that knowledge when we were 18 and 16 that we have now, of course these little children, they're getting it, so they're fortunate. They're fortunate. Hopefully in the turbulent teams it will stay with them. But so we don't like change because the soul doesn't change. Najayate namayate vakarachi. There is no change for the soul. So we don't, birth is very painful, we don't remember, but not only for the mother, for the child it's painful. And death, disease, old age, nothing. We don't want these things. But death is, of course, I think somebody recently died, death is happening so much, all the time. We don't want it. And Yudhisthira answered the question, Dhammaraj, what is the most wonderful thing? Most wonderful thing is that everyone is dying all around us, but we think it won't happen to us. We will live forever. So do we ever think what it would be like to be dying or have already left our body? We see so many devotees leaving their bodies here and, of course, in Vrindavan. But do we ever think that would be me one day? It will be the last cremation we have to go to? And we won't need to worry how to get home. Because nature will already have made the arrangements for our ride back to where we have to go. So, one devotee's mother got Alzheimer's disease. You know, Alzheimer's disease, you forget. You can't remember. And her son, it was like a stranger to her. I remember when my mother was in her 90s also. She didn't have Alzheimer's, but, you know, my son was staying with her. It was her own grandson. And she would say, oh, that young boy is very nice. Not like, you know, it's like her grandson. So this one devotee's mother got this disease, and her son became a stranger to her. And her last words to him were, it was so nice to have met you, from the mother. So, very interesting how we meet in this life. And then we separate, never again to meet in the same forms. But we think this life is everything. So the soul is full of knowledge, but also it's forgetful. When we're covered with this body of false ego. So there's a verse in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So at nighttime, when the clouds are in the sky and the moon is there, the moon cannot appear directly shining because the clouds are covering the moon. But the clouds, when they're covered over the moon, they are shining also, because the rays of the moon are coming through. So we, in this body, you cannot see the soul. We cannot see what we really look like, who we really... We're spiritual beings, but if we look now at each other, we cannot see, oh, this is the soul. We see the covering. We see the clouds. But because the soul is shining through, therefore the clouds shine too. But because the soul is shining through this body, the body is shining too. And the body seems really nice. But actually, it's the soul that's beautiful. And we see, when we see the consciousness, we're seeing the symptom of the soul. Right now, we cannot directly perceive the soul because false ego is covering, body is covering. And so, but it is our own consciousness which illuminates the false ego. Just like we heard one of the verses, I think, Anuruddha Prabhu was talking how there's a reflection. The soul is reflected in the false ego. And so our soul is being reflected, and that's what we see. We don't see the soul, we don't see the person. We see the reflection through the body, through the false ego. So, the good news is that we are spiritual beings. We are made of Sat Chit Ananda, eternity, bliss, and knowledge. And the best news is we're part of Krishna, and we belong to Him. Somebody asked me a question recently. Is there sense gratification in the spiritual realm? I said, that's where the real sense gratification is. Here, we're trying to enjoy it through the body. Just like if you put something over your tongue and you try to taste the food, you can't taste it. So now our real tongue is covered by this body made of so many elements that we cannot taste the real thing. But by performing devotional service, then our senses become purified. And we get the taste for chanting Hare Krishna, we get a taste for spiritual food. So, the soul and super soul are in the body together on one tree. One is watching, one is eating. We are eating, we are trying to eat, we're trying to enjoy, but we are not really enjoying. So, by the grace of the Lord, then we can understand these things. So one time, we may wonder, well, what's the purpose of all this? So Prabhupada was meeting with some theosophists in South America, and they asked Prabhupada the question, why is there anything? And Prabhupada answered in one word, in Sanskrit. And he said, Ananda. The purpose of everything is to be happy. We're searching for love, we're searching for happiness, but in the wrong place, in these bodies. We become attached, and one day the body will leave us, our friend will leave us, we'll be separated. So now we see things separately from Krishna in this world, separated by our conception of life. But actually everything is connected to Krishna, as we heard yesterday's class. There is one saying in the Jewish scriptures that we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. That means Atmanam Mahate Jagat. We see the world through our glasses, as Prabhu was saying yesterday. If we have pink glasses, we see the world as pink. But one thing everyone has in common, the center is me, how I see. Why don't people understand? Just like if you go to the forest, if you have a lot of beautiful trees, if you're a businessman, the trees will transform into dollar bills. You'll think, how can I get money from these trees? How can I cut them down? I can make furniture, I can make paper. So he will see the trees in terms of money. If you have young boys and girls, they will see the trees as a place, oh, let us go and enjoy in the trees somewhere. Nobody will see us. If you have some yoga students, they'll think, what a good place for meditation. Let's go and meditate in the trees. If you see a poet, they'll say, oh yeah, I'm going to go there and write some poetry about the trees. Everybody has their different way of looking. If you see a devotee, they'll think, wow, what a good place for a temple. Harinam Kirtan, what a good place for Kirtan. And so everybody has their different conceptions of life. And according to the scriptures, there are five basic conceptions of life. The first one is called Anamaya. Anamaya means you see everything as food. Food is everything. Food is everything. The goal of life is food. If you see a young child, a baby, that is his concept, that food is everything. He just wants to drink milk, that's the main thing. And how does he know what something is? You know, a one-year-old, a two-year-old, when they start crawling, they pick up things, and what do? As soon as they pick up something, put it in their mouth. Does it taste good? Is it something to eat? No. If it's not something to eat, then they throw it. Because food, anamaya, then some people don't go beyond this conception of life. The food is everything. They have this anamaya conception. Then the next level is pranamaya. That means just to survive, just to live. That is the goal of life. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Having a nice flat. Having protection from elements. This is the goal of life. So we see most of the people in this world, they're in these material conceptions of life. Anamaya, pranamaya. Then the third level is gyanamaya, that you're more on the mental level. Oh, I love beautiful art, I love beautiful music, I'm a thinker, I'm a student, I'm learning all these philosophies, I'm a scientist, I'm living in the mind. I'm living the world of the mind. This is gyanamaya. That's also material, because the subtle body is material. But then the fourth level, we begin to touch spiritual life. That is vijnanamaya, and that means we realize, well, there's something higher than these things. There's something higher than just working hard all day and night and trying to survive. There's something even higher than music or these things. Or actually, we don't reject these things, but we see how we can connect these things to Krishna. Just like I was a physician before I was a devotee. So I was trained to hear. I was trained to hear different sounds. And when I heard the holy name, I thought, wow, this is the perfect sound. Because when I was in classical music, so I was thinking, oh, this is a way to communicate, to connect with the musicians hundreds of years ago, and I can express their emotions and feeling. But then when I heard the holy name, I said, wow, this is a way to connect to God. Well, this is the best music. Now, Krishna, everything is best. It's best music, best everything. But, so you come to a little, of course, I jump to the highest level, Anandamaya. But on the Vijnanamaya, you realize you're not this body. You're different from the body. There's something higher than just existing in this world. And there's the soul. So what is the behavior of someone who knows that he's not the body? We hear in Bhagavad Gita so many things. But right in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives Arjuna an instruction that if you, so you should not lament for the living or the dead. So then he gives an instruction. So if you know you're not the body, you're going through all these different, the soul is going through these changes from childhood to youth to old age. If you know that, what should you do? And then he tells Arjuna, therefore, tolerate. You have to tolerate. Yeah, when things happen, just tolerate. So the fourth level, the last level, Anandamaya, that's what Prabhupada, this is the purpose of life, to be happy. And when we can connect with Krishna, then we're really happy. Govinda. Govinda means the pleaser of the cows and the senses. So if we please Govinda, then our senses will be pleased. Because we're connected to Krishna. So We see Krishna everywhere and in every being. Actually, it's not just enough to see, okay, Krishna's everywhere, but we have to see him in our life, in our activities, in every thought. And so we have to offer the results of our activities to Krishna, and we do everything as devotional service to Krishna, and then the connection will come. We have to make the connection, we have to practice, constantly meditate on the fact that Krishna is the only enjoyer, he's the only proprietor. We have to see, whatever we do, we see the connection with Krishna. And that's why people get depressed. Depression comes when we feel disconnected from Krishna. So we have to see the connection, and the easiest way is to chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Are you convinced that you're spiritual beings? Are you convinced that your soul and not body? Yeah, don't think you won't get old. Don't think it won't happen to you.
Thank you, Maharaji, for speaking this beautiful Krishna guitar into our ears. It's music to your ears and food for the soul.
Prabhupada's mercy. You have a question?
No, it's
okay. Yes?
How we understand that this giving, getting birth in this material is very painful, and I asked this question before that why are giving more births to kids, like why yogis are giving more kids, and I was told to liberate the souls, like why not adopt, you know, which are already kids are there, and liberate them.
Okay. Yes, why not adopt children instead of having our own? Because our process is very scientific. So when we have conception, time of conception, we prepare, we chant 50 rounds before we conceive. Because we follow Garbhadhan Sanskara, that means once in a month, you try to conceive, you chant 50 rounds before. And in that way, you can get a child who is perhaps from the spiritual world, perhaps a devotee from previous life, very attracted to take birth in your womb. If you just adopt someone, then you don't know what karma you're going to get with that child. I see was some devotees, they adopted a child from a different ethnic background, and they got so many problems when the child became a teenager. And he was dyslexic, and so many things happened. So when you conceive your own child, you have more control over the situation of what type of child you want to come into this world. You're bringing, in fact, you're bringing souls that are already on the path of Krishna consciousness and perhaps fell down in last life or something happened. But they have a better chance of finishing in this life their Krishna consciousness. So everything is a science. Now, some devotees do adopt. I have, there was one, he was a congregational member. He's Peter Burwatch, perhaps, you know. He sometimes lectures. A famous tennis star who had association with Srila Prabhupada. So he asked the devotees, so I cannot have children. I need to adopt. Should I adopt a boy or a girl? And they all told him to adopt a girl. Because they said, because she won't leave you. She'll take care of you in your old age. And girls are more spiritual. That's what the devotees told him. So he adopted two girls. And this first girl, I was there in Vrindavan. And he was a rich man, but he was giving her some allowance. So what did she do with the money that she got from her father? She came to Vrindavan and gave it to the poor children in Food for Life. And she went there and personally was feeding the children. And so it was quite amazing to see the result of his. So sometimes it happens. Sometimes it happens, but we do follow a certain science. It's better if you can have children to liberate them and to bring, attract saints into this world, attract pure souls, souls who are more pure by preparation, by this Garbhadhan Sanskara, which their husbands are supposed to follow. Okay?
Yeah. But anyways, you cannot avoid your karma. You're going to get karma.
But it's not good to look for it. It's not, it's not good to look for more. I mean, it's better to follow the rules of the scriptures. And that way, you will be able to get out of this world faster. Why stay here? Why stay here longer? So when you become guru, then you adopt all the people in the world. You know, then they're all your children, even though you don't conceive them. And you can liberate them. That's what the gurus are doing. They're having so many children without going through the process of conception. Thank you. See, this is an example of a devotee child who is not only these children will liberate themselves, they will liberate the world. They will save the world. These children who are brought up as devotees. Yeah, I see those who sometimes the adopted children give lots of problems to their parents who are devotees when their karma, when their material nature comes out as teenagers. So yeah, it's good to try to follow the rules of spiritual life, bhakti yoga. So we are following bhakti yoga and we are trying to attract souls into our lives who also would like to follow their path. Perhaps didn't finish and would like to finish in this life. So there's a science to that. Any other questions? Yes.
Mataji, you have talked about various kinds of maya and this levels of maya, yoga maya, this gyano maya and this other maya. But a human beings is a combination of maya. It is not a single kind of maya they have, you know, we have affected by. Sometimes we are affected by various.
We're on different levels. We may be on three levels at once. We love food. We like to have a nice place. And also we like music. Yes, it's true. That's the material. There's only three material. And then there's two spiritual mayas. Not maya. Maya means energy also. So vijnana maya, ananda maya, that means connection with Krishna. Ananda maya. So there's yoga maya, that is connection with Krishna. Maha maya is forgetfulness of Krishna. So we're trying to change maha maya into yoga maya. That's Krishna consciousness movement. We take all the maya of this world and we give it to Krishna. I mean, not the bad things. Not meat eating, gambling, illicit sex. But we take Krishna's energy. Everything is Krishna's energy. We say, okay, let's engage in Krishna's service. And then it becomes spiritual. And then it helps you. The same thing which was dragging you down will uplift you. Your mind, which was dragging you down, when you connect it with Krishna, when you think of Krishna, it becomes your friend. It becomes your friend, your best friend.
So that stage will come when become Paramahamsa?
No, it can come. It's a gradual process. It will come when you come to Anishta. If you just get past anartha nirvritti, past the struggle, when you come to firm faith, then yes, then that's the level of balance. When you come to the mode of goodness, then the modes of nature are in balance. There's still little passion ignorance, but they're balanced.
Okay, yes.
So you need to come to the mode of goodness. You need to come to the nishta level where it's the first step of liberation. And then you start, oh, yes. I am not this body. I am a servant of Krishna. And you start feeling that. And that's what you want. But if you're not on that level, then we heard the purport the other day, where even if you're not, Prabhupada said a wonderful, what was that statement? Let's read this. It was an amazing statement. We read at the last class, and Prabhupada said such a thing. Oh yes, it stated in Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, one who has engaged everything, his vital energy, his wealth, his intelligence, and his words in the service of the Lord, or who desires to engage all these in the service of the Lord, no matter how he is situated, is to be considered a liberated soul or a satya drig. Such a man has understood things as they are. So if you just desire to do these things, you say, oh, I wish I could go in Harinam. Oh, I wish I could do this. Then you're a liberated soul. So we need to change our desires, that's all. We cannot stop desires. The soul has desires and you cannot stop them. But we need to change them to spiritual desires. like such a statement by Prabhupada. Or you desire to engage everything. That's good enough. And it's also, then you're liberated. Okay, it's a matter of consciousness. Krishna, consciousness. Be conscious of Krishna. Think of Krishna. Desire for Krishna. I want to think of Krishna. You're not thinking that, okay, I want to think of Krishna. How can I think of Krishna? How can I remember Krishna? Any other questions? Yes.
Thank you for your class, Mataji. In the lecture you mentioned that we see the world through the conception of our mind.
We're seeing the world through the conception of our mind.
Now, in Bhagavad Gita, 3rd chapter, 42nd verse, Krishna is giving a hierarchy of who is higher than what.
Yeah.
He says that...
Hierarchy.
Hierarchy. The senses are at the bottom, above that is the mind, above that is the intelligence, and above that is the soul.
The soul.
So, we understand there are three subtle elements, mind, intelligence, and false ego.
Three subtle elements, okay? Mind, intelligence, false ego.
I'm always intrigued why false ego, which is probably the subtlest of the subtle element, is not mentioned in this verse.
In which verse?
In this verse, where it's saying that the hierarchy of control is essentially soul is higher than intelligence is higher than mind is higher than soul.
Oh, why is false ego not? Because it's a part of real ego. I mean, it's ego. Ego is there. So, it's not like you have, it seems like we have two egos in this world. But actually it's one ego, who we really are, but it's being covered by false ego. That's why it doesn't separate, because soul is there, ego is there. So ego is the highest. It might be false, it might be real, but the real ego is highest. No, the false ego is not highest, it's out of there. That's why they don't mention it. If in the other hierarchy, then false ego is there. I mean, when the senses are on top, and then they control the mind, they control the intelligence, then you have the false ego.
So you mean to say, because the real ego always accompanies the soul?
The real ego is the soul.
Is the soul, okay. So that's soul, okay. So essentially they are at the same level.
Yeah. False ego won't be there in that spiritual hierarchy. That's why they don't mention it. There is no false ego. Ego is ego. And then if your ego is covered, then you have false ego. Okay, any other questions? Yes?
You were saying how the example of the wind that carries different aromas, and but it doesn't really get involved with it, just drops it whenever he just asks you.
Yes.
But how to apply it? Sense in a practical way, even though like, we get affected by the three modes of material nature, and it seems to just carry things for a while longer than what we need to.
How do we practically apply the idea of the wind dropping things, carrying and dropping?
Like without jumping to stages where we are not yet.
Yeah, without jumping to higher stages where we are not being. Well, when bad things happen to us, then we can try to see how it's temporary. That it just like Bhagavad Gita says, happiness and distress are like winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, and one must learn to tolerate. So we remember Bhagavad Gita in those cases. What shall we do? What is the practical application when these things happen? Then we tolerate. And if we tolerate, then it will go. It will go faster. If we tolerate, then it will go faster, because our attachment will go from it. Yeah, that's what I would say. At the same time, the application is there that we have to connect it to Krishna. Krishna is eternal, his happiness and distress is temporary. So we are like, the soul is like the wind, but we can also take it a step further. Where is the wind coming from? The wind is coming from Krishna. We can go a step further also and connect it to Krishna, and that will be helpful. In Uddhava Gita, it's just basic detachment, but we know we have further knowledge. Yes, okay. And where does the wind come from? It comes from Krishna. So therefore, Krishna is all good. And so we can connect to Krishna, and then we will be able to pray to Krishna that we can let go. There is a beautiful Bhakti Godhead article some many years ago. The title was, Let Go and Let Krishna Do It. So we want to hold on to things, we want to control things, but actually Krishna's controlling and he's doing the best thing. He's putting us in the best situation. But we have to trust Krishna, we have to have faith. Oh yeah, okay, Krishna knows what I'm going through. And then let him do what he wants to do for us.
Okay,
I'll bless you, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.